Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Back, once again, on American Freedom Radio. Everyone's asleep, everyone but me, and I feel like I'm doing it all by myself. I haven't heard that my theme song in so long that I suddenly feel excited, you know? Have you ever noticed that the more you learn about the world, the more frustrating it gets because you realize that you can't learn at all and you get kind of angry and sort of jaded a little bit, but then somebody plays your song and it all goes away instantaneous. I don't understand how it works, but we have a very special guest for you today, ladies and gentlemen, an A-lister for your listeners, my listeners, rather. His name is Jeff Harmon. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me on, Vinny.
All right. I am quite interested to hear a little bit about you and what it is you do. I also need you to plug your websites for us amid said explanations.
No problem. So what it is that I do? Well, for years, and actually this has been since the mid-70s, I got into this through my mother. I was actually a very left-brainer back in the 70s and in the early 80s, too. And what happened was my mother started nailing girlfriends so accurately. I said, "What are you doing?" And she started to show me. And it was pretty amazing because
Your mother showed you how to nail your girlfriends?
No, she showed me how to – in other words, she was nailing how they were. In other words, she was nailing exactly their personality traits and whether or not we'd get along. And I said, "This is amazing." I said, "I want to learn this stuff." And of course, it was astrology, and it was really fascinating because she would say certain things that I'd go, "Wait a minute, there's just no way you could know that," and particularly in compatibility. She'd say, "You know, Jeffrey, this girl here, you're just not going to get along with her. You two will argue about everything." I was, "Well, how do you know?" And then she'd show me in the chart, and I'd go, "Oh, my God, this is right on." So that's how I got into it. And what happened is in the 80s, I really started cracking into a lot of ancient astrology. I started getting a lot of translations and ancient manuscripts. And at the same time, I'm teaching physics classes and electronics classes. I'm doing forensics for the government, you know, all this left brain stuff, right? And then on the other hand, I'm doing astrology, you know, the woo-woo astrology. And the more I started noticing its accuracy, the more I started going, okay, now wait a minute. This isn't just a bunch of Linda Goodman sun sign stuff. And in other words, the ancient astrology. So it was fascinating. And it's really actually the ancient astrology is so different than modern astrology because it's really advanced astronomy applied scientifically. Whereas modern astrology, everybody knows their sun sign. So I was very fortunate to get into this, you know, quite a long time ago. And I have to say, it's never stopped. It's kind of found me. And then I moved to California in the 80s. And it was back and forth between Chicago and of course, Beverly Hills and Hollywood. And I just started picking up clients year after year after year.
And you're doing relationship counseling and things of that nature, aren't you?
You know, all kinds of stuff. I have a lot of business astrology that I do. I have a lot of clients in the entertainment business where we do electional astrology, which is signing contracts. I do location astrology. For instance, here's a good example. When a movie is released, they're often very interested at the time it's released. Signing contracts, particularly marriage elections, I do a lot of that. And I do a lot of real estate stuff, too. And also business things, people opening businesses, grand openings, filing corporations or LLCs or some type of a legal entity. I mean, I've got clients all over the world we do that for. Art galleries, I have fashion companies, again, movie producers. The producers particularly like this stuff because they're the ones writing the checks and they want it to go well. And I also have a lot of A-list actors too and actresses. It's and sometimes I do personal readings as well. I do a lot of that actually, So it's like an amalgam of things that I'm doing.
Well, and could you give an example? Like, let's say somebody's about to release a company, what would you do for them?
Well, a lot of things. First off, there are questions. See, the ancient astrology in India would call it prashna. Prashna is a word that means divinational. You don't need your birth chart, don't need to know what time you're born. And what you do is you can literally ask a question. Now, in the West, particularly in the, I would say, medieval times up to the late 1700s, that was a system called interrogation astrology. And they're one and the same. Prashna and interrogation is simply asking questions. So someone might say to me, if we pursue this particular course of action, is it in our best interest? And I will cast a chart, and depending on what it is they ask, I read the chart, and that gives the answer. And they can either pursue it or not. The other type of stuff I do is electional astrology. Now, that's the stuff I use a lot in business and in personal. For instance, a marriage election is a perfect example. I get this all the time where someone says, hey, we're looking at getting married. When's a good time? And what I do is I will go through a window of time that they generally give me and see if I can find a chart that looks really auspicious for marriage. And how it works is the eastern horizon at the moment in time the bride and groom are pronounced, that has to be in alignment with the western horizon rulers. And you can't use the modern zodiac. You have to use the ancient one. It's much more accurate. And that's how it works. And electional astrology is very advanced. That's the stuff Ronald Reagan used. That's the stuff many of the secret societies have used from time immemorial. When the king sent his generals out to war, they would always use electional astrology, or most usually they would.
Well, just like with many people can have a skill or an ability to read into things a little bit more than the other person, they can be used and they can also be misused. So, we're talking about this not to do with Kabbalah, is it?
Well, Kabbalah figures heavily in there, and I'll tell you why. No one's quite sure, but some of the best astrology seems to be coming, if you will, BC. It's certainly, I would say, at least 300 CE, BC, whichever you want to call it.
That's about the time before the Great Flood wiped out all the civilizations and knowledge and things.
Interestingly enough, Babylonia, Egypt, and I would say Greece and India seem to be the real places it's coming from. And
a lot of the mathematicians from Greece, I think, like Pythagoras, for example, was really into his astrology, wasn't he?
Absolutely. Most of them were. You know, Benjamin Franklin was really into astrology. I mean, so many people. Robert Mitchum, which I don't know if you know who he is. I'm sure you know who he is. He's the actor, you know, very famous. And he was a ghostwriter for Carol Ryder, who was the astrologer for Ronald Reagan, who everyone just relegated to Nancy's astrologer. It was really Ronald's astrologer. They used to meet in Beverly Hills at Nate and Al's every other Wednesday. It was interesting stuff. For coffee.
Oh, sorry, continue.
No, go ahead.
No, it's my show. You keep going.
I insist. it's just interesting stuff because a lot of astrology is looking at cycles and what is there. Like, for instance, in the United States, the crash in 08 and 09, I mean, I totally saw that coming. I mean, there's a couple of astrologers I hang with, and we all just scratched our heads and said, this has got to precipitate something. And it did. Even 9/11 showed up. I remember in Beverly Hills, I was walking through the living room, and that was right before my son was born. And I said to my wife, I said, there it is. That's the Pluto-Saturn opposition. And that's exactly what happened. So, yeah, I mean, these things really show up on the radar screen. Oftentimes, it's exactly hard to pin down precisely how it'll happen, but you know something's going to happen.
Well, I think it's like the elite, for example, you know, you call them the ubiquitous they, if you will, have been into the occult and have been into these things for quite some time. And I drew the conclusion a number of years ago that the things that they're into that seem crazy or whatever, they wouldn't still be into them if they derived no benefit or if there wasn't something to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and some of these folks are into quite a bit. The rabbit hole goes quite deep. Astrology is certainly one tool, but these people are playing with a lot of stuff. And, you know, I think depending on which circles you're looking at, it gets pretty dicey. There's clearly a lot of stuff going on with magic, and Satanism and so on and so forth. And that's not conspiratorial. I think it's a fact. And I've actually run into that in my practice where I'd have someone come into my office in Beverly Hills and they go, "You wouldn't believe what's happening to me." And I go, "Well, try me. I might. I'm looking at your chart here." And I would hear the tale of what had happened. And it based on the astrology, particularly using Vedic astrology, which is a very old system out of India, it really shows up when this stuff shines around. There's certain periods people can get into that really bring around some old karmic energies. Now, some people will never live to see that. It's just not in the chart.
You're talking about like karma that'll destroy your life or something, like some form of Karmageddon?
Yeah, or karma that I think will come at one that really plays heavily. And you know, that whole law of karma is the premise of Jyotish and Nadi astrology. The Egyptians saw it that way as well. And essentially, that's what I don't think anyone is their astrology. I think we're experiencing our astrology. Mm. And one of my favorite astrologers who put it quite well, very succinctly, was Rabbi Ibn Ezra. He was very well known in the 11th century. It's actually the 10th century because it was in the 1100s. But he said it best. He articulated what the ancients said, and that is the soul is outside of celestial influence, but the spirit, or you could say the lower self, if you will, is not. And that's the incarnate spirit, if you will, which is attached to the soul, and the mundane world is influenced by the karmic energies of the celestials. That's why if you start looking into Kabbalah, is kind of a very generalized term, especially today. They've tried to turn the Kabbalah into a Tony Robbins self-help course, which I don't know that it works like that. And not that I mean Tony Robbins in any way, but just clearly, it's too complex to package up and sell. It's a very complex discipline, and I don't think its roots are that easily discernible, and it gets pretty deep real fast.
Have you noticed that's how people are kind of operating now? They don't want to know the details. They don't want to know the complexity. So in so doing, they get these brief summations of things that they don't fully understand, and then just kind of like go off and get themselves into trouble.
Exactly. Yes, and particularly worshiping at the feet of some guru who, you know, if they please them, they get a few more crumbs of knowledge. Usually the pleasure comes through a payment, you know. but there are some very legitimate people out there teaching things, and there's some that aren't. And
what do you make of astrotheology?
Well, who's astrotheology?
Well, there would be Dr. Louis Thierry and Santos Bonacci, the only two I know of.
Well, I guess I don't have a really snappy answer for Louis Thierry because I don't know him personally. I know he relies heavily on the nodes. My take is Nadi astrology is not something anyone invented. It's exceedingly old. And that's why I like the traditional or classical systems. And when I say that, that's astrology prior to the 1700s. Because in my opinion, it's not something someone invented. It's a divine science that was handed down. And much of modern astrology, not that some of it isn't good, but much of it is centered around someone writing a book, creating a name for themselves, and then saying, you know, look what we've discovered. And sometimes there's something there, But if they were to look at the incredible corpus of knowledge that exists all the way back, it's profound how good it is. It's absolutely profound. You know, classic cases, if you told the king, when he asked you if they went against, you know, a particular, you know, kingdom, would they win the war? Well, if you were wrong, you might lose your head, you know, where today it's just not like that. You know, it was a much more exacting science. And it even tells you when it's not exact. Like oftentimes I'll get charts where it's murky or the answer is like, if you do, you might regret it, but it's not defined yet. And the reason that is oftentimes people haven't spent very much time contemplating. It might be a by-the-way question or something. So it's a really interesting science.
So we're not talking about like giving incredibly vague horoscopes that apply pretty much in a general way to everybody.
No, I'm talking about questions. You know, like I get a lot of questions like, is this realtor good for me?
Well, unfortunately, Jeff, we're just coming to break now. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Please go to my homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and make a donation today. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't. Go ahead, make my news. We'll be right back. Oh, yeah, welcome back. There must be some kind of way out of here, said the TPPA negotiators. Have you ever noticed that whenever massive agreements get signed, they usually kind of do them in secret so that nobody knows what the hell is being frickin' signed? And even if they do get a copy of the full documents, nobody ever reads the terms and conditions these days? I don't know. Everybody's talking about like evolution. I'm starting to think more along the lines of devolution. We're certainly devolving as far as I'm concerned. Hopefully we might be able to turn that around at some point. My very special guest... it's Jeff Harmon. Jeff, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, your website's there is just jeffharmon.com. Is that H-A-R-M-A-N-N?
No, it's H-A-R-M-A-N, just one N, and it's A-N, not O-N.
Ah.
Jeffharmon.com. Yeah. J-E-F-F-H-A-R-M-A-N.
My bad. Now, in terms of astrology, I don't really know all that much about it. I don't live my life by cosmic rules or go to people for advice when it comes to down to these sort of things. So for somebody like me, what would you say would be a good example of how you've made astrology work for some people?
Well, that's a good question. I like that, Vinny, because you know what? I actually don't live my life by astrology either. And I tell everyone not to – astrology doesn't make things happen. People do. And what I love about ancient astrology is – in fact, I get this a lot when really – J.P. Morgan – let me give you a phrase that I love, and then I'll make my point here. J.P. Morgan had a great term. He said, millionaires don't use astrology, billionaires do, and they keep it quiet. Why I like that phrase is because most people who have a drive or a goal and they're very intent on making something happen, they're going to find a way to make it happen no matter what. And most people who are successful are very driven, very determined, and they're very resourceful as well. So what astrology offers, it's kind of like a stop-and-go light. It doesn't tell you you can't do something. What it'll do is give you, like interrogation astrology, will tell you what you're up against. It's kind of like jumping on an airplane. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to fly with a pilot that says, well, folks, I hope we get there. I hope the stars say we can get there. No, I'd rather fly with the guy who says, I'm going to get you there and safely. But I'm going to check the radar first and see if there's anything in the way that might stop us now. Now, that's the way astrology should be used. In other words, you're finding out what's on the radar screen. And then that way, you are better aided to accomplish your goal. Like, for instance, wedding astrology, I do a lot. Someone says to me, you know, hey, I want a good time to get married or sign a contract or file a corporation. They're not asking me whether they should or shouldn't. They're saying, I just want a good time to do it. And what you'll find is putting the wind at your back, kind of like going to a stop-and-go light, you're going to do much better when the light's green than you will when it's red. Now, there are folks who get through red lights, and some do it without tickets or accidents. But my recommendation is try and find a green light, right? So that's more the way you look at it in a simplistic way, is you're finding a time when the energies are congruent or agreeable to make something fly. And I'm actually a bit of a skeptic. I've always, throughout the years, looked at things and said, you know, geez, is this really real? And I have seen people get married or sign contracts. I'm one of them. 25 years ago, I filed some patents, and some really great patents, too. And I got involved in an investment banking group, and I had a perfect time to sign it, except we got into negotiations, and I ended up signing the contract about 6 hours later than I had elected. And when I got home and looked at the time I actually signed it, I went, oh my God, how could I have done this? I didn't realize this was going to happen. And even though I knew it, it ended up in a lawsuit exactly like the chart had said it would. And that's not fate. It's not predicting the future. It's just, again, if you're going on red lights, you can pretty much expect some kind of a challenge, you know, even though it's more complex than that. But does that answer it fairly well?
Well, I mean, I was just thinking, what element of putting your thoughts into action affect those outcomes rather than the prediction itself? Like, let's say, for example, if that person wasn't asked the questions, if they weren't shown the chart or what have you, well, an astrologer was just sitting back as a third party, just watching this play out, would it have the exact same result if you don't tell the person about it and have their consciousness clicked onto it?
Yeah, here's a classic example. I've had so many people come to me and say, what happened to this marriage? Or what happened to this business? And I go, well, what time did you start it? You know, perfect example. I just had two really well-known, I can't mention their names, A-list actors a while back. They got in this really intense lawsuit. And, of course, it was kept fairly quiet. But long story short, it never got to trial, but it was all in the preliminary stages. And they said, and one of them said to me, he said, you know, what the heck happened here? I said, well, I don't know. What time did you sign the contract? And he said, well, I remember because we were at the Beverly Hills Hotel and I paid for dinner and we signed the contract 5 minutes before the check was paid. I said, perfect. You got the time. So I cast the chart, looked at it, and I said, did you guys go to court right at about this many months into the deal? He said, that's exactly when it all happened. They went. There was what we call a primary directed moon opposed Mars. And whether you see, belief's not required. That's like, you know, if you jumped on the Titanic, it did what it did. By the way, the Titanic, you ought to see the chart for when that set sail. I did a documentary on that. I got to finish.
J.P. Morgan probably knew a lot about it, considering he owned the Titanic and two other ships that were of identical size.
Yes, yeah. And there's theories that the conspiracy theories about that, which may be true.
Well, he was on it, and he invited all his competition, like Pittsburgh Steel and all the heads of major corporations who were actually his competition at the time. Free tickets and stuff on the Titanic, and he left Southampton with them, and then he jumped off in Ireland, I think, before they went across the Atlantic at full speed.
On Queenstown, Ireland, that's right. And there was also the reason there's so many pictures is because there was this, I want to say a Jesuit priest who was a photographer, who was also ordered off the ship in Queenstown, Ireland. That was the last stop. And that's why they have so many photographs of that ship between they left Cherbourg, France, then they went to England, and then the last stop was Queenstown.
Yeah, I think that's there's a whole lot of suspicious things. And I don't know, are you of that kind of belief or general persuasion that kind of things just don't happen by accident? Or is it a little bit of both, you know, in the Forrest Gump sense of the word, part leaf on the breeze, part fate?
Well, you know, there's an interesting document that supports some of what we're talking about. It's called the Upanishads, and there's one particular called the Tatryaka Upanishad, and it actually talks about how this solar system is like a matrix of karma. And it says that the planets are not just referred to as planets. They're actually called graha in Sanskrit. And graha actually means seizer or grasper of the aura. And when you think about it, we're all incarnating at different times. You cannot get the same chart twice. Absolutely impossible. Forget the sun signs. We're all unique. There isn't one. You can't get the same astrological chart twice. Not when you get into the details of fixed stars. You figure our solar system is doing almost a half of a billion miles an hour around the central sun in the Pleiades. It's called Alcyon. And essentially, we're going so fast, the planets are spiraling behind. And the Earth is doing nearly 68,000 miles an hour around the sun. The moon's doing Mach, whatever, I think 2.5, close to that. And when you look at this, and then you add in all the fixed stars, there's no way you can get the same chart twice. I mean, on your telephone, you have 10 keypads, including zero, you know, 9 numbers and zero, omitting the pound and the star. And you can call anybody on the planet with a combination of about a dozen numbers. In astrology, you have 360 degrees, you have 12 houses, 12 signs, infinite numbers of fixed stars, and you also have all the aspects between all the planets. It's infinite. Well, it's beyond human comprehension.
Have we always had 12 signs? Because I was under the impression there used to be a 13-moon calendar or back in the day.
Well, there is, and exactly right. And there's also the Yufika, the 13th sign. That's a sidereal system, though. That's a different system than tropical. See, there's a lot of different types of zodiacs, and there's secret zodiacs. There's also zodiacs that are using other fixed stars that are completely different than the zodiacs we're familiar with in modern culture. And it's interesting stuff because if you go back, just like the Egyptian zodiac is very similar to the modern zodiac, but much more complex. It has many more divisions. It has nocturnal divisions, diurnal, meaning daytime, nighttime, and participating. And it's just a much more complex system than today's modern astrology. And I'm not saying modern astrology doesn't have some value, but the older stuff is clearly better. And most of the astrologers who take the time to learn it agree.
Long, give or take, would it take somebody to learn it? I mean, obviously there's varying levels of talent and what have you, but I would act under the assumption because of its complexity, being finished learning it isn't possible.
Well, that's true. That is true, and I'm humbled all the time. But the system, the ancient system, works, and once you understand it, you then basically understand the complexity of it. Sometimes there's charts. I need 15, 20 minutes to study them before I figure them out. If I'm doing wedding elections or corporate elections, I oftentimes have to spend a week on it and get back to someone where I have several. This is my kind of daily routine. I have many charts that I'm working on, and I'll literally keep a chart on them and work on them over time. And then once I select the probable ones and discuss with the client what they want to do, whether they can do something on those particular times and dates, then I refine it and then get back to them with the finished stuff. You know, and then we make the final decision. So it's not simple.
I think that because it's that way, it entitles people who have a broader knowledge of it to really make a living off of it. Like I interviewed a lady, what was her name, Lada Dunchiva. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she charges like anywhere between 140 to £1,000 a session or something of that nature, because people really want to know that much about their own chart, and they can't figure it out themselves, so they pay somebody else to do it.
I have people that put me on retainers, and some of them are in very political and, you know, high positions in business, and I can't mention names, but some of them are working with people we all hear about, I'll just say that. And I keep everything confidential. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a lot of clients. I do a lot of restaurant openings. I do store openings, clothing stores, fashion stores, you know, entertainment agreements, musical contracts.
Can I ask something? Do you believe that this popularity of astrology among big players, people that are more or less classed as within the elite realm of humanity. Do you think the popularity of astrology has increased, or has it been basically going along baseline the whole time?
I would think at that level, fairly baseline, once they qualify that you know what you're doing. You know, that was one of the things that I think was surprising to me in California, was the amount of word of mouth that I got work from. It's people would hear that I did what I did. And sometimes they'll stick their toe in and they'll test you and ask you certain questions. And then, you know, they would call me back and say, my God, that was right on. I'll never forget. I can tell one story. There was, it was in Beverly Hills on Wilshire, and there was a very prominent group who was meeting, and the gentleman who hired me, had me on a retainer, said to me, he says, we're going to have a meeting about this project. It was an entertainment project. And I said, you know, my recommendation is don't do it this day. I said, put it off, do it another day. This is a nasty day to do this. And he turned to me and says, do you understand who's coming to this meeting? It's so-and-so, so-and-so. And these are all very, you know, very prominent, well-known people. And the funny thing of it is, I went to the meeting, and it was scrap metal in the wall. Everybody ended up fighting and filing lawsuits towards each other. And he says to me, he says, what the heck is this black magic? I said, no, not at all. It's just really nasty energy today. And I said, I wouldn't have done anything today except lay low. And he was, you know, again, based on the quality of the people. Well, they're all filing lawsuits, and he said to me, he says, well, what do you think is going to happen? I said, well, I don't know. So I cast a chart, and I said, you know what? The whole thing's going to dry up and blow away. And it did. And he's the only one, I think, that didn't fire up a retainer with his attorney because of what I said. And the only reason, and I always tell people, don't deify me. It's the chart that's right. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just the mailman.
Yeah, you know, I'm just the translator, bro.
That's right, exactly right.
I didn't create the language,
and it's not predicting the future. It's an interactive consciousness.
Let me lay something on it. The whole universe is basically built upon layers of frequencies. Okay, whether it's
right.
a 3D energetics, plasma, blah 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 blah. So, let's think about this. You ever seen those NASA footage, and they've got like a picture of like the moon or Jupiter or something, and they're taking these radio signals off of them, and they have these certain sounds coming off them, like. Really, really creepy kind of stuff. And I was just thinking about this now when you're talking about how planets are in conflict or such and such and blah, blah, blah. And then thinking about all of the frequencies that they're all giving off simultaneously and how every single part of our body is atomically built up upon frequency variations and vibrations. So naturally, whatever the hell is happening on in the cosmos will at the very least have some effect here. And you were talking before about how this knowledge wasn't just created by people, how it was actually passed down. And after the break, I want to ask the question, passed down by whom and why? Indeed, we'll be coming right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show and the American Freedom Radio Network. Love it. Be right back. And welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about the gangster playboy scum on top. It's The Vinny Eastwood Show. And my very special guest, Jeff Harmon, is joining me. Now, we want to get back to that question I asked before the break here, Jeff, about, you know, the frequencies and how everything's sort of built on it and who brought astrology to mankind and why.
Well, first, I would like to, I really like what you brought up about the frequencies, and I'll tell you why. The quantum physics, as well as DNA research, is actually proving that it's an interactive collective consciousness that resonates with us. In fact, you had mentioned they're measuring all these different frequencies out of the planets, and that's exactly true. In fact, there are harmonic frequencies with each and every planet that work through brainwaves, and that's actually scientific proof right now. And when you look at, like, for instance, Mars has a very aggressive energy, and Jupiter's a very divine energy. And going full circle back to the Kabbalah, I believe that these are angelic forces at work. And if you look very, very high, up past anything in the physical realm. First, there's the divine energy, God, if you will, and then there's the seraphims, the cherubims, and the thrones. Now, without even getting into religion, because I'm with George Carlin, the best thing to come out of the religions was the music. So the point is that the third hierarchy up there, those three hierarchies, appear to be very divine and creating frequencies or vibrations far beyond, I think, anything humanly measurable. Then you get into the next hierarchy, which is the dominance, virtues, and the powers. And that still appears to be outside of any of the galaxies, the gas clouds, and all the molecules and everything else. Then you start getting down into the third hierarchy, which is the archangels, the angels, the spirits, the intelligences. And then you get into the fourth hierarchy, which is very parallel to what most religions talk about. Whether you get into the Western religions or some of the Eastern religions, they all talk about some fall, some war. Even in the ancient Bhagavad Gita and many other, you know, stories, if you go back in Egypt, etc., that there's always this story about the war where the spirits fell. Well, you know, I love your commercials, because you're always talking about protecting health and, you know, and vibrations and organic, you know, herbs, etc. And I believe one of the reasons GMO and so many other toxic things that are going on in our environment is because there's a natural vibration to herbs and natural grown things that are very close to the divine source that created them. And the more processed it gets, the further away from its life force energy, the more inert it becomes. And most of the foods we eat today are irradiated, gassed, and God only knows what by the time they get to us, and other things as well. But not to get on that track, but this fits right back where you're talking about. There is a divine energy that appears. Quantum physics is actually proving this. In fact, one of the experiments that started it all was actually quite a while ago. It was done by Young back in the 1800s, where he had the double slit experiment. And he was basically proving that human consciousness, or for that matter, observation, affected the way matter acted. So it has an intelligence. And since then, there's been many others researching in quantum physics who are proving that everything is not just molecules and atoms, but it's all vibrational energy held in very specific, repeatable states. And I don't think it's by chance. It appears to be very, very divine. And this is, again, why ancient astrology is superior to modern astrology, from the standpoint that they start getting into the spirits, the demons, the intelligences, the angels, and the archangels that rule all these different divisions of the ancient zodiacs, which gets into some pretty interesting stuff.
This makes me suspicious that perhaps the elite who are into the ancient astrology perhaps concocted an agenda to corrupt modern astrology, or at least take out
there's
the really
no
juicy bits.
In my mind. There's no question in my mind. In fact, I can tell you that, and I hate to shine a light here on this, but there is strong evidence that ever since the Vulgate translations, particularly from the Solomonic times forward, and we have the Romans to thank for this. Now, in the Judaism sect, they talk about the Second Temple being destroyed. But I can tell you, that's take the religions out of the equation. There was all kinds of occult phenomena, and I really believe that Solomon had the demons incarcerated, and I think they got let loose. Malachi Martin, who was a exorcist for the church, was very worried. In fact, he actually communicated such to M. Scott Peck, the psychiatrist who wrote The People of the Lie, and he said, "I believe they're trying to kill me," and I think they were. And that's the ubiquitous, like you said, quote-unquote, they. Who are they? There appears to be a force that's opposing divineness on this planet. It's always been there. I don't think it's, you know, the government. But there are people who run the upper levels of the pyramid, if you will, above governments, that I believe are playing with some pretty dicey stuff. There's a lot of satanic stuff going on. Goetic magic is probably one of the most dangerous things on the planet, and Enochian as well. There'll be some people who disagree with me, but that's actually the Shem Hemaphorus that rules the 72 angels and demons that are permeated in Exodus. And that's not a theory. That's some pretty bizarre stuff. And most, Aleister Crowley was probably the most published one who played with that, who, in my opinion, ended up pretty much insane at the time of his death. And Jack Parsons, JPL, all these, L. Ron Hubbard, they're all tied in there doing some pretty interesting stuff. And going back to astrology, the astrology just simply is the system that it all interacts with. But the free will of the individuals and these people playing with this stuff, that's you know, it just supports what the ancient systems show.
Supports, yeah. Kind of what a lot of the old church sort of things were saying, or what was that movie, Constantine, how he was saying that there's half demons, half angels among us, and they're just like battling over the influence of our free will kind of thing?
You know, you bet. And I'll tell you, I can show you several documents, and one in particular was the ancient Babylonian Talmud, which it says, "Alas for the blindness of the sons of men. If they could see what worked about them on the astral plane," it's also known as the Yetzeratic plane, often where we all go when we exit the body, like we call death. I don't believe anyone dies. I think we're all spiritual beings in soul cages having a physical experience. You know that little hollow beneath your nose, between your lip and your nose? They say that's when your guardian angel from the thrones knocks you out, so that when you're incarnated and born, you can't remember where you come from. Some people can. There's a lot of clairvoyants who do. But most people, most of us don't. We get smacked on the rump, oh, it's a boy, it's a girl, and boom, the illusion of your reality begins. And it's like we're all playing scripts with these charts.
Oh, dude,
I was at a
music festival over the last weekend, right, volunteering. And we were on the back of the truck heading in to help with the parking. And we were talking about The Matrix and what our favorite quotes from it was. And I said that one of my favorite quotes was when Neo met the Oracle in the second film. And he said, am I trying to make a choice? And she goes, you're not here to make the choice. You've already made it. You're here to understand why you made it. And I said that the deeper meaning behind that, or at least to my mind, is that we're here via our own choice, but we have to understand why we chose to do this.
And well put. And I think there's something. I think that's why The Matrix had such a huge impact, particularly the first and second ones, is because people felt. And most people feel there's something to that. The movie Ghost, I like an awful lot too, with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore. A lot of truth to that. Some people think it's a little bit milquetoast, but I actually liked it. I thought it was a wonderful script. And my opinion is it's probably very close to that in terms of we dwell down here in the lower planes, if you will, of the astral. And there appears to be seven of those, times seven, which is 49. Some interesting stuff. Astral travel is achievable by anyone. If the religions were really interested in educating people, they would be teaching this stuff, or at least about it. And I'm not saying what the religions are teaching is bad, but it's very incomplete compared to maybe what it could be. And, you know, most of the stuff I do is actually more spiritual counseling, where I use astrology as a tool rather than just doing astrology. Though most of my clients, they want to know location astrology, which is mapping and all that. Location astrology is amazing. I've had so many clients over the years, including myself, corroborate it. It's so accurate, it's creepy. If you have your accurate birth time, you can look anywhere in the world, and there's literally ley lines called latitude crossing, specific only to you, and there's aspects specific only to you across the globe. And as you move east, west, north, and south, you end up on them. Some of them are lovely. Some of them are suckaroo big time, is what I call it.
Congress. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff, would you like to hang on with me for another hour?
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right.
Well, I mean, if you want me, I'll hang around.
I think I do. It'll be great.
All right, bud, sounds good.
We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to American Freedom Radio. Thank goodness it's back. It's been a long, long time. And also, I'm a listener-supported broadcast, so please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and sign up for a few dollars a month today. We'll be back in a moment. All right, welcome back. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, finally returning to American Freedom Radio 4 nights a week. That's Monday through Thursday for those of you living in the United States on the opposite side of the dateline, and for those of you in New Zealand who don't know what 9 till 11 central time means, and there's no reason you should, it's about 4 till 6 p.m. local New Zealand time until we get into what's it called daylight savings. That's always a real bastard. I hate that stuff, man. Like, dig this. Right now, normal time, okay? It goes all the normal times throughout the summer. And then all the normal times throughout the winter is 2 hours earlier. I remember when I first started at American Freedom Radio in 2010 when I was doing 5 till 7 a.m., and then that became 3 till 5 a.m. 5 days a week, including Saturdays. That was some rough stuff, bro. My very special guest is Jeff Harmer. Jeff, welcome back, son.
But thank you. You know, I wanted to compliment you again. I like your commercials because they focus a lot on organic materials and protection of the body. You know, it's... Just not to digress here, but in the 60s, my mother used to have medical astrology sitting around on the table. And I didn't give it much thought because I remember I said earlier, it wasn't not until the 70s that I got into it. But then later, I said to her, you know, what is this stuff? And she started showing me how there were cycles that could show when health challenges could ensue. And also, there's another type of medical astrology, which is divinational or interrogation is what they call it. And I can't practice medicine. I can't give medical advice. But I've had a lot of folks, including with their animals. I'll get people with cats, dogs, horses, you name it. They'll ask questions. And it's amazing what insight you get to the energetic imbalances or when something might change. It even gives you timing. I've worked a lot with doctors on this. There's another type of astrology called Ayurvedic. You've probably heard of Ayurveda. Ayurvedic is a branch of the Vedantic astrology, which essentially looks at genetic, or you could say physical imbalances, and it seeks to balance the chart with a number of different herbal supplements or just awareness in certain things. And then there's also gemstones and remedial measures that can be used to support these things. And I have to say, I was skeptical many years ago. I've had many teachers. Some of them were wonderful. Some of them weren't. And most of them are not around anymore. And long story short, I can tell you it's amazing. So I love your commercials. I just want to say that.
I like them too. And it's... It beats Coca-Cola and Burger King advertisements, to say the least. You know, and dig this, bro. Just a New Zealand example for you. Advertising is not really providing a whole lot of revenue for people now because people just don't want to watch the ads because they're advertising crap that they don't want. To a large degree, and they're just trying to kind of manipulate you and use all these quick little catchphrases and oh my god! But dig this:
it's mind control.
We've got this big private media company in New Zealand here called MediaWorks, right? And their CEO, former CEO, is now the government communications minister. And that government communications minister brokered a $40 million bailout for this one little old New Zealand mainstream media company because they couldn't pay their broadcasting bills because of their amount of advertising, even though they were advertising, you know, major corporate banks and Coke and Pepsi and goodness knows what other kind of crap. And it just occurs to me that, look, I don't think that people appreciate the volume being doubled and being sold crap that is bad for them all the effing time.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, how many people have sat there and just yelled at the television?
I love the drug commercials, you know, where they say, you know, and, you know, the side effects are boom, 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 boom. And, you know, after 30 seconds of that, you might get another 30 seconds of how great it is.
Yeah, yeah. Are you feeling slightly depressed because you just broke up with your loved one? Well, try this and it'll make you feel better. Side effects include massive depression and death and suicide.
Exactly. It's like, bend your mind around back. You feel like taffy when you're done watching the commercial. You
know? It's like they're insulting my freaking intelligence, bro. I mean, like, I can't even do it anymore. I had to throw the television out. It's literally under the house gathering mold as we speak. Right, it's just resting on the dirt. That's how little an F I gave about my TV. That's how much advertisements made me hate it.
Yeah, that's one of the things I liked about George Carlin. He would always point out the irony in things. It was just really...
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, sometimes the what was it? There was an ancient story. I think it was this myth that came out of Rome that there was this book, and within the book contained pages that would tell the future. And the emperor at the time, I forget who he was, expended large amounts of gold and men in pursuit of this book. Find it he did, and he was very upset when he found out what the future held. Foretold of a grain shortage in Rome, that all the grain that they had to feed their people would go moldy. And so in an effort to counteract this prediction, he confiscated all the grain from all around Rome and put it in a big giant granary that he constructed and ordered it under guard 24 hours a day. The granary, however, wasn't constructed perfectly well, and it had a few leaks in it, and all the grain went moldy. Now, the moral of the story is sometimes the very actions that you take to prevent certain outcomes that you don't want to happen are the very actions that are required for those outcomes to come to pass.
That's right. Sometimes, yes. Mm. Yep. You know, yeah.
Now that brings me on to a question for you. If you can do like your own charts and things like that. Do you, or does somebody else kind of have to do it for you?
No. I can do my own charts. It depends. My birth chart stuff, absolutely. Cycles are amazing. One of the things I love about Vedic astrology is you can never ever be in the same place twice. It has something called doshas, which are cycles that commence from the moment you're born. And interestingly enough, it appears the sphere of the moon is, on an astral sense, the last place you go through. And it's the lunar mansion. See, there's so many different secret zodiacs in ancient astrology. There's actually 27 lunar mansions, some folks use 28, that are surrounding the moon. And I always joke around with the astronomers because I said, no matter how much you polish the lenses on your telescopes, you're not going to see that zodiac either. Because they always joke that, you know, the zodiacal signs are not in alignment with the actual constellations. And I said, well, you're correct. But these are more in a much more spiritual sense or astral sense, if you will. And the moon sets the timer in Jyotish astrology. And what I love about it is looking at that, it's really amazing the information it offers. And again, 40 years of looking at this stuff, it's you just can't make this stuff up. There's no way. Can you do things to alter it? Absolutely. And I find consciousness, awareness shifts how it reacts a lot. And there's a lot of things you can do.
Have you found that, like, being nice to people actually returns karma to you? Because I've found it's kind of like, it depends who you're nice to. Because, like, well, if you're real nice to a psychopath or whatever, nice. you crap out of luck, bro. I'm sorry.
Well, I think there is, I really do believe that karma happens. You know, you brought up something earlier about the frequencies of planets. One of the things that is coming to light right now in much scientific research is that our DNA, not only do we have our strands of DNA, but there appears to be encoding within them that literally resonates as a transmitter receiver. And what's fascinating about this whole topic is that everyone appears to be doing it uniquely to their resonant energy. And if you look at astrology in an ancient sense, we all appear to be resonant energy patterns in the physical body that are completely unique from one another. You know, like I really despise modern astrology where everyone's a Pisces or a Scorpio or an Aries and all this. And I always laugh and say, no, you're not. You're a soul having a physical experience. Look into the eyes of anyone. There's no one exactly the same.
I always thought about making a new astrological term with two turds circling each other called feces.
That's a good one. I haven't heard that one yet.
That's modern astrology.
Right. It really, I call it love, light, and cluelessness, because what it is it's just this airy-fairy crap. Not that there isn't some accuracy to it. There's clearly some resonance. But when you talk about compatibility, like I do this all the time in business, like someone will say to me, hey, if I hire so-and-so, do you think we're going to get along in a high position? And sometimes I won't have their birth chart. We'll just look at an interrogation chart. Or they may have their birth data. And what's interesting, and couples, I do this all the time, forget the sun sign stuff. In Vedic astrology, if you start comparing compatibility, if you have a couple with Moon and Mars aspects that are nasty, zebras are zebras and tigers are tigers, they're not going to get along. Even though you could be compassionate and, like you said, being nice to someone karmically, but I'm sorry, but lions eat zebras. That's what they do. They're not doing it to be mean. That's just what they do, you know? And it's like that with people, too. When I see Sun-Saturn aspects, the one with the Saturn on the Sun dominates. Now I see certain, like, here's a good example. There was an astrologer and I back in the 90s. We would date different girls, and we would try and compensate for incompatibilities. And my conclusion was, after a long time, not a chance. It's just zebras are zebras and tigers are tigers. And it's interesting, how I met my wife was actually at a gas station in Malibu. And we exchanged cards. She had a little bumper sticker that said, I love England, and she loves the crop circles, right? She was researching crop circles. And actually, she wrote for UFO magazine. And I didn't think anything of it. We exchanged cards. And about a month later, she called me and said, hey, remember me? I said, yeah. So we met at a little place called the Earth Cafe in West Hollywood. And I brought my computer, and I immediately cast her chart. I said, do you mind if I run your chart? And she said, no. So I put it in there. And right off the bat, I noticed, wow, we're compatible. We had a Moon-Venus aspect. And the Mercury's are in the same sign. I'm like, okay, throw the chart away. No bad aspects, really good. And I see this all the time, whether it's in business or in compatibility. If there's resonance between benefic planets and there's no malefic aspects, you're going to get along with them. If you have neutrality, it's kind of like that. It's neutral. There's no attraction. There's no repulsion. So, again, this is much more scientific than sun sign. I mean, forget Libras love Scorpios and all that crap. I mean, it just, that's, again, love, light, and cluelessness. The ancient methods of Nadi and Jyotish astrology are astounding. And I'm not saying that.
Well, there's much evidence.
It just is.
Yeah, well, there's much evidence to suggest that ancient people had a far more advanced technologies and understandings of the universe than we do today, which is why it's been given rise to the belief that they were given their knowledge by star people and aliens and things like that.
Well, that's right. In fact, the rishis in the ancient, see, there's the Aryan infiltration, which appeared to happen a long, long, we're talking 4,000 years ago in the Indus Valley, where they claim a lot of early civilization happened. They were called rishis, which meant seers. We get the same thing in Egypt, the same thing in the Kabbalah, where they would literally have visitation, call them angels, call them aliens, call them space people, whatever it is. You know, and I believe a lot of this was angelic visitation as well as alien. And there is no way anybody by reductionary observation came up with the complexity of Vedic astrology and the ancient Egyptian astrology. Not a chance. You could not sit on mountaintops, watch this stuff, come up with this kind of. The interesting thing is the Royal Observatory. In fact, I think New Zealand was, or no, it was Australia was participating in this as well. The Royal Observatory in England did a study to see if the ancient ephemerises are positions of planets in the ancient Sumerian, Egyptian, and Vedantic stuff were correct. They were astounded to find that they were within like 30 minutes of arc of accuracy. Now, that's pretty darn accurate when you say there's 60 minutes per degree. And who the heck knows who's right and who's wrong? But that's not like kind of by chance. And when you look at the divisions of the very, especially in Vedic astrology, all these, they're called Vargas, they're divisional charts. I mean, it's, you can't make this stuff up. There's no way. And there's no way they came up with this by, again, observation. They knew that this solar system was going around a central sun. They also knew there was a 250 million galactic cycle. Now they're trying to sell us this shit that, you know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492 to see if the Earth was round. Really? Really? When the inner, like John Dee and Queen Elizabeth and some of the scrying, and then you go back into some of the Kabbalists, not a chance. They're what they sell the public and what was known on the inside is two completely different things. And I can prove it. I've got manuscripts here. They were measuring latitudes, longitudes, and declinations of planets, you know, 2,000 years ago. Now, you want to tell me that they're going to sell me that they thought the Earth was flat?
Well, I think knowledge is power, right? And so, hence, the powerful decided to occult and secreted that knowledge away so that they couldn't give the power to everybody and level the freaking playing field.
That, I think, is quite the case here, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the world suddenly makes a lot more sense if you think like a psychopathic criminal scumbag once in a while.
Or, yeah, just with critical thinking alone, right?
Yeah. Well, exactly I wonder why they would make GMOs and stuff that are, like, running rampant and taking people's farms all over the place with stupid, frivolous lawsuits. Because they're a criminal psychopathic scumbag, maybe? You know, just taking a stab in the dark here, bro.
They're possessed, you know?
Well, that's another aspect I wanted to actually get into with you now. I mean, we're talking about this on this spiritual battle and aliens and angels and demons and things of this nature. I mean, let's think about it metaphorically for a second, and let's think about this. Let's say, hypothetically, all of this stuff's absolutely real. There's great evidence to say that angels and demons exist and aliens as well. And the existence and the planes of existence within them, like whether it's 3D or going into the 5D or however other dimensions there are. I think there's like 11 or something. Somebody on crack told me once. And he said he was also the only person who could see them all. And I think what this means is, in terms of just being a human being right here in this particular little 3D moment that we're having right now, what is it that we're really here to do? And I think that it's actually to influence the future, right? You use the present moment to influence the future, to make yourself something different than what you are, to learn, to grow, to evolve. Or at least that's my thought on it. We'll get your thoughts after the break, Jeff. Back in a moment, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. Back in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? My very special guest, Jeff Harmon. Now, Jeff, as we were coming back, going to break earlier, I was talking about, hypothetically, let's say angels, demons, and aliens are all real, and they gave us astrology, and there's a purpose to our existence. And I was saying that this purpose is basically to grow, evolve, experience, and influence the future when we won't exist, to basically somehow either leave a mark or create sort of dams, as it were, to channel energy for future generations. What's your perspective?
Well, that's an interesting topic, and I don't claim to have any specific answers, but my opinion at this point is that when we incarnate, it's believed that the soul, what the astrology shows, the soul is believed to be tied into the body, or better yet, the spirit is tied into the body with its soul above it at the first breath. Now, what's interesting is most birth charts are not right on. I usually rectify them or play around a little bit to find them exactly right on, because most birth certificates, they look up at the clock and say, oh yeah, it was about this time. That's usually when the umbilical cord is cut and the child's fine and they know the gender and somebody takes a clipboard and writes it down. Hopefully the clock is accurate. And many years ago, you know, most people today, the birth times are probably more accurate because clocks are more accurate. But you start getting born back, you know, the 60s, the 50s, the 40s, the 30s, and on, a lot of times those birth charts, you don't have any type of accuracy. And especially with mechanical clocks, they could be off several minutes. So the point is, and this brings to what my theory is, and it's my theory is actually based and influenced primarily by many ancient documents, particularly the stuff in the Upanishads and some of the Kabbalistic documents, which state that karmic elementals are what we all create. I believe we are all elemental generation machines. Now, what I mean by that, they're called thought form elementals. Have you ever heard of the gentleman, I'm sure you have, Dr. Emoto, who just passed away? He photographed messages in water. He had several books out where he would have people meditate, pray over water, and he'd freeze the water, photograph it, and of course, he gave explicit examples where crimes have been committed or evil things have done, it always looked nasty. And then when he had really defined sacred prayers by groups of people or individuals of different denominations, they would always come out looking like sacred holy geometry. What he gave us proof of is exactly what has been stated. The Egyptians were masters at elementals. In fact, we've heard they had elementals guarding the tombs. And some of the stuff that happened when those original tombs were broken into is a little questionable. It's a little hard to just explain away why so many people had passed away. Anyways, long story short, what my theory is that we are all generating elementals all the time by our thoughts. And emotions seem to be the magic component in the strength of an elemental. So in other words, if you're really, 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 really excited about something, you're creating elementals much stronger than when you're just sitting there watching images flashing on a TV. So the third eye chakra appears to be where these come from. So going back to astrology, where does astrology fit in this? Well, if you factor in the fact that we may have lived other lifetimes. Some people don't believe in reincarnation. I do. Because I think the entire system of astrology supports reincarnation. So if you lived before and you created energies, maybe this solar system, and particularly planet Earth, I call it the soul cauldron, where we keep coming back and we keep getting to play with free will, because you can do anything you want on planet Earth. You can heal someone, you can help them, or you can kill them. Now, you're going to get the consequences of both actions, and hopefully you're not doing the latter. But if you're helping people doing good things, you're probably creating good elementals. And yes, there's a lot of jerks out there who do evil things, but reciprocating that is probably not spiritually healthy. And what supports that is I see certain charts where it's just right on. I mean, especially Vedantic astrology, you go, I'll look at them and say, oh, how many marriages have you had? Oh, I'm on my fourth. They have Mars in the seventh house, debilitated, aspected by Saturn. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, you know, and I've seen, you know, like even in my own chart, you know, I've had doctors try to figure out what was wrong with me. And my mother years ago said, Jeff, you got Saturn on the moon. And sure enough, I've always had a chronic fatigue. Now, knowing that, I've compensated a lot and I've also paced myself a lot. And I see this in so many different ways, whether it's physical, spiritual, on and on and on. The charts, God wouldn't do that to us. You know, I just don't believe God's up there making sure this one comes in deformed and this one comes in wealthy and happy and this one here comes in this way and this one has bad marriage. I don't think God would ever do that. I think maybe what God created here is an exceedingly divine, homogeneous place where free will can happen. And maybe, just maybe, why we get the birth charts we get, my personal opinion is this is absolutely true, is because of the karmic elementals we're dragging around like a gunny sack from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. But the interesting thing is, and this kind of supports what a lot of religions have tried to purport or say to people, is that if the soul truly changes, not exteriorly, not, you know, buying a new set of clothes or a car, but if you really change at a soul level, the angels, called the angels of destiny, seem to back off. There's actually clinical proof to some of what I'm saying. There's a doctor who I really liked. Her name was Dr. Louise Ireland Fry, and she wrote a number of books, one in particular that I really, really like, if I can remember the name of it now. She basically proved, it wasn't the Unquiet Dead, that was Dr. Edith Fiore, but they've proven under hypnosis that entities will speak, or sometimes there was a force that they said, "Who are you?" And they would say, "We are Legion." And we only react when certain things happen in the free will of the individual. But when the individual changes, we back off. Now, this supports very accurately the Shem Hem Aforish, which are the 72 angels and demons, both 72 to the good, 72 to the evil. Or you could say they're kind of like a sword, if you will, that seems to interact on the soul. And what's interesting is that free will seems to be allowed. In other words, you get to choose whether to be good or evil. But it sure seems that the charts come back. In Nadi astrology, you can actually see previous lifetimes. And again, I don't think anyone's cursed. I think they created it. Like, we all created what we have.
Mm. Well, if we can create what we have, it means we can change what we have. One of the elements that I've been thinking about recently is when people go, "Oh, those sheep, they'll never wake up. They'll never find out the truth about 9/11 or this, that, or the other." And I'm like, "Well, bro, are you saying that you, like, woke up by yourself? You didn't watch no documentaries. You didn't get told by nobody. You didn't ridicule anybody before finally accepting the truth after a long period of time where you're denying it to yourself because it really, really doesn't sit right? Okay, for F's sake, there's plenty to do, you know, and we're all procrastinating." In fact, I came up with a joke the other day. Have you ever heard the teachings of Don Juan?
Yeah.
I came up with a joke the other day. What do you call a guy who wanted to write the teachings of Don Juan but never got around to it?
I don't know.
Carlos Procrastinator.
Carlos, I like that.
It's kind of contrived.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, speaking of 9/11, okay, I agree. Buildings do not come down like sparklers from jet fuel. And anyone with an IQ above room temperature can see that something was going on there that they weren't telling us. And, you know, you can, and I've heard architects and so many people give wonderful explanations for how that couldn't have happened the way it was put to us to happen. But then I lean back and I say, you know what? There's the law of karma. You may escape this. We're in a three-dimensional, five-sense world. And the problem is our minds, our lower, what I call present personalities, which is what's connected to the five senses, the eyes, ear, nose, and touch, and all that, smell. But really, this is very myopic. We're not smart enough to figure out truly what creation is operating in this level of consciousness. And people think they're getting away with things, but ultimately they're not. And the astrology supports that. Or they wouldn't have the energies locked into these charts that they do. So we're creators of, I believe, what we ended up with. And what's interesting is if we start to alter, it does change. And that's why I think some type of spiritual practice, meditation, or conscious self-awareness is probably the most important thing in whatever your faith or belief is, really is the key to this stuff. It really is. You won't take away, but you react differently to the energies.
You've mentioned George Carlin a number of times here, so I don't know about you, but I'm of the belief structure that part of divinity is comedy, having a sense of humor, because I found that the worst people that I've ever met are people without a sense of humor.
Well, I actually worked with George. I met George back in 94, and I actually had the chance to record him in the studio. How I met George, I was working on a film soundtrack, and I said to the manager in the studio, I said, you know, this place really sounds like crap, you know, and he says, yeah, I know, we've been trying to get it sounding good. I said, well, that's what I do. I said, for years, I owned a recording studio, and then we did film and music and commercials, and I said, I modify mics and so on and so forth and consoles. And he said, well, let me talk to the owner, who was George Carlin and his daughter, Kelly. And that's how I met George. And he was, you know, again, he was character. Oh, my God. Meeting him in person, he's funnier there than he is on stage. And he's funny on stage. You know, and George can, you know, he got a little coarse, too, I might add. But his humor was amazing. If anybody ever wants to listen to something, one of my favorite pieces of work George ever did was called Language Complaints. He was in Washington, D.C. at the press club. There's not one expletive in the entire, you know, the entire exposition he did. Absolutely amazing. If anyone wants to question that he wasn't a very intelligent individual, watch that. George Carlin, Language Complaints. He basically busts on what politicians do to twist the language around. Yeah. Mind control.
Well, I was told by Dr. Bill Deagle once that the two highest IQ jobs that you can find in terms of, you know, the people who get attracted to them with the highest IQ is theoretical physicists and comedians. Now, and I theorize that it's for the same reason. Both are a way of simplifying and making solid, complex equations. And that's essentially kind of what comedy is for me. I mean, like, I watched a video recently.
Good analogy. Yeah.
One of my listeners invited me around to his place, and they showed me this video of these guys playing music to these things that had either dust or water in them, or a Tesla coil or whatever. And you found that these elements actually, just like that, the ice experiments with the Japanese scientists that we were talking about earlier, that when you plug particular types of sounds into the elements that you've got around there, they produce these exact geometric shapes and patterns and what have you as well. And I was just kind of querying, I mean, just thought of it now, I wonder what kind of geometric shapes and patterns would be produced if you were to play laughter, like real, you know, human gut laughing.
Oh, he did that.
Yeah?
Dr. Emoto, oh, yeah. In fact, you're broaching a subject I love, and that is, see, the ancient systems in Vedanta and the Tibetan lamas, they called them samskaras. They had other names for them too. Samskaras was a term that actually meant a thought form resonant frequency. See, everybody, when we think, we are projecting. If you become clairvoyant, you watch someone's aura, you can actually see they come out of the third eye chakra, go out into the aura, and they generally re-enter the base of the spine, right at the back of the neck. In fact, I've sat in like a bar or a nightclub, and I've watched when people get drunk, you can actually see the strange entities enter their aura because their aura gets knocked down. And we're all resonant beings. I mean, this three-dimensional, five-sense world is so myopic compared to what we're really around. We, you know, human divinity and animals are so amazing. You take the finest robot on the planet, it doesn't have the dexterity you do when you pick up a cup of coffee. I mean, you look at a bird coming in and landing. There isn't a plane that can do that. Not with that kind of dexterity. Language, all language is divine. In fact, if you look at the expression, you take a computer and you have it come up with an idea and express it verbally the way you do, not a chance. Artificial intelligence cannot do that.
I'd like you to continue on with this after the break, Jeff. We've got one more segment with about 10 minutes in it. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Very much appreciated. Back at this inaugural broadcast and the return of American Freedom Radio. Back in a moment. It was funny. American bonkers. It's the worst kind of bonkers there is it not? I was just talking today with one of my friends here in New Zealand, and I was like flooding out American Freedom Radio everywhere, saying to everybody how awesome it is and what have you. What I like about American Freedom Radio is that you don't have to lie about how awesome it is. It actually is that awesome, bro. You could even exaggerate it, and it would probably still make the mark. But anyway, she was saying something along the lines of, oh, but we're in New Zealand, we're in New Zealand. And my argument is, bro, look. There will be no countries under a world government, will there? It doesn't matter whether you call yourself a Kiwi or an American or a Brit or an Aussie or a Canuck. There will only be one title that you will be able to accurately put upon yourself. Slave. That's basically it. You got to get used to the situation. You're already, in basically premise only, some form of slave to the world government scumbaggery. All right? So, you know, get with the programming. That's basically what I'm trying to say here. Just listen to American Freedom Radio all the time. Support it. Donate it to it. Buy the products. And for goodness sake, try, if you can, to spread it around to people, right? Tell people about the Facebook pages. Put the website on your own, if you can. Help us really to relaunch this network, because it's been like an 18-month down period. No woman's ever gone through that in her life. I can guarantee you. That was a really bad joke. I'm sorry. Jeff Harmon is my very special guest. Welcome back, Jeff.
Yeah. You know, you and I were talking right before the break. You know, one of the things that I believe is genetic and karmic consciousness is encoded and transmitted and also attached through our DNA. And I think the reason we're incarnated at the times that we are is to play that out. And conscious self-awareness shifts that. Now, when you talk about the chemtrails and all that stuff, there is an overt attempt to dumb down human consciousness. In fact, you know, it's interesting. I just put out a newsletter just recently that says we have been in what we call a Uranus-Pluto square, and that has actually been going on ever since 2012. And Obama just signed in a major act, and you mentioned that earlier, where they're basically rubber stamping everything, and then nobody had time to read it because some law firm came up with a four-ream thick, you know, set of laws that nobody could read if they lived to be 80. You know, but the bottom line is, or at least understand it, let's put it that way, because everything is so weasel-worded and cross-worded that you'd have to reference this to reference that in order to reference the reference that was just referenced in the back of the, you know, whatever. So the point is, the astrology, there's another type of astrology called mundane astrology, and that's the stuff that I believe the forefathers and many of the inner secret societies throughout history have used. And one of them is called the Great Conjunctions. And we are marching towards, everyone was freaking out about 2012. Oh, the world's going to end. Remember all the movies, John Cusack flying out of LA as the streets folded up behind him in volcanic ash. I always said, I don't think anything's going to happen in 2012. And that's a matter of record. I said that on a number of stations, including Coast to Coast back in 2009, I think it was, or 10. And bottom line is, I think 2020 is the marker, and I'll tell you why. It's not my quote-unquote prediction. It's what the ancient astrology says. The last major conjunction was in 1702, and that was when the Industrial Revolution really got underfoot. Now, granted, the United States and the world, all that happened in 1776, just 74 years later. But if you go back and look from 1702 forward, we were marching forward with steam, mass production, all kinds of stuff. And it's been just racking up ever since, exponentially. The next major Jupiter-Saturn conjunction, and this only happens at very specific places of the zodiac, is exactly, not kind of close, it is precisely on the winter solstice of 2020. And that's the one I would say is going to march in, quote unquote, if they can get it to happen, the New World Order. And I think they know this, and I think they've been marching towards it and doing whatever they can do to make it happen. Now, who that they is, I don't think is the government. I think it's the folks above the government. You know, as Rockefeller once said, give me control of the money, and I don't care who makes the laws. And that seems to be true.
That was Mayor Amschel Rothschild, not Rockefeller.
Oh, that's right. That's
Rockefeller right. Said competition is a sin.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting little place, this Ukraine situation right now. Do you know that most, I don't know if you know this, but almost all the Hollywood moguls, and I say moguls, I mean Jack Warner, Louis B. Mayer, all the big wigs, and those are the only ones we know about, came literally from a little place within 100 miles called Galicia, and that's right in the western Ukraine area. Ukraine is very strategic. Rothschild came out of there. Rockefeller came out of there. The whole Rothschild family came out of there, the original ones. And you look back, the mysterious World War I, which all the head scratchers still can't figure out exactly what happened there. And then, of course, World War II was repositioning of the wealth and control of it. Well, we're marching towards, I think, a time where we're going to hit such advanced technology. You know, I think Tesla technology is going to become, it's already there. It's been there. It's been suppressed. I think 2020 is the marker where we're going to see this world explode in technology. The question remains is, will we be the incarcerated mind control slaves, or will kind of divine providence and maybe our own conscious awareness keep the evil side of it off center and keep it marching forward? Because if you look backwards in time, evil and good has always coexisted. Good seems to prevail. Not easily, but it seems to always prevail.
With great sacrifice.
With great sacrifice, buddy, you bet.
Yeah, Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's and you're right. You're exactly right. And that's kind of where I think it's at. You know, I mean, there's a lot going on right now in the Middle East with this whole ISIS thing, these backdoor-funded terrorists, which is very mysterious, I might add. And then you look at the whole issue over there in Ukraine. We are cooking right now in a very precarious situation. Do you know that there was 7 aspects to this Uranus-Pluto square? And the 6th one was on December 15th. That was precisely the day, to quote George Carlin here, that the owners yanked the oil prices down and threw Putin on his knees. And because that's what that was all about, in my opinion. They yanked the world global price of oil down to almost half its, you know, cost. And what did that do to him? Slammed him on the ground. He got his collar yanked and thrown on the ground. Now, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with any position here. I'm just showing the power these people have. Well, the next and final 7th aspect is literally March 17th. So what's interesting about this, I think we're going to see some events come up this spring that are very, very powerful. And 2020 appears to be the crescendo of it all, where I think not that date is going to have any earth-shattering events, but I think that's a marker where you're going to see a turn of tide of events marching forward. The question is going to be, is at what sacrifice will human consciousness and freedom still be in play? Because, you know, Tolstoy might have said it best, I went out to find the enemy, and it was us. You know, it's human greed, and that seems to be operating at very high levels, and we're in a dangerous world right now where few control the resources of money and food. Look at Monsanto. You mentioned that earlier. And it's becoming so centralized now. And, you know, even education, it's all corporatized and influenced by a small collective few. And I just hope and pray, literally, that this is kept in check. And it really takes, I think, conscious awareness of everybody to do that. You know, and it usually comes at great sacrifice.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the actions that you take will have real effects. And I was talking to somebody the other day about this, is that so a lot of people miss the lesson on quantum physics, is that it's not just, you know, everything happens without you doing anything. It's actually, you'll get these ideas that don't exist, okay? You can think up something that doesn't exist, whether that be a movie script or an invention or what have you. And unless you actually take the steps necessary to will that very thing into existence, it doesn't permeate throughout existence. It doesn't actually do anything, because it's just an idea in your head that evaporates. And this is this is the misunderstanding that people have got here. And I got the came up with a joke where you're talking about, like, what kind of flowers do you give an astrologer who believes in past lives? Carnations. What kind of flowers do you give an Iraqi on Valentine's Day? Depleted geraniums.
Oof, man. Yeah, that's well, they got plenty of those, didn't they? Yes, they did, sadly enough. Yeah.
The florists are flourishing.
I'm glad they got rid of all those weapons of mass delusion, yes.
Yeah, of course. The fact that those weapons have got to be here somewhere. Nope, not over here.
Oh, look, we've just found the largest source of oil in the world and the finest machine grade. How about it? Well, we'll take that instead. Yeah.
Who would have thunk it? You know, hey, it's just our lucky day.
That's right. Jeez, never knew that oil was here.
You ever notice how everybody kind of excuses, like, accidents and stupidity and, like, basically they use that as the justification for everything that happens? Oh, they were just stupid. They didn't find the weapons of mass destruction. Like, bro. People lie and deceive, and the more powerful they are and the more they have to lose, the more they do it. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Harmon has been my very special guest. Thank you very much for listening.